ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
Welcome to another episode of The Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. Joining us this week is DM168 editor Heather Robertson. Here's what's coming your way. Scorpions 2.0 is a go after years of delays. Then the forgotten continent. Mpox shows how Africa is often overlooked.
I don't understand that old racist Europe and the West is superior to everyone is still hanging there in the air. And one would think that we'd learned from COVID.
Later, a win for South Africans as inflation hits a three-year low. And forget about Free Willy, it's Free Charlie the elephant. But first, as many South Africans struggle to come to terms with the murder of 16-year-old Devonay Nell earlier this month, and the family of slain pastry princess Thembekile Letlhape try and come to terms with her death at the hands of an alleged abusive boyfriend, we ask once again, what needs to happen for women and girls in South Africa to be safe?
Heather, it's been a good while since you've been on the show. How have you been?
I'm great, thanks. And you, Liz?
I'm good. I'm ready for summer and getting into the summer vibes.
It makes me so happy that spring is here. I'm checking the green leaves on the trees and the grass is getting green in the Highveld. It's like,
Yes. No, this is my favorite time of year when that change just happens.
And it's so sudden. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Now, August is, of course, Women's Month, and it comes to a close this coming weekend. Sadly, as with most years as of late, it's been a devastating month for the women and girls of South Africa. We saw the terrible murder of 16-year-old Devonay Nell in Overberg in the Western Cape at the beginning of the month. And then we also have the case of our beloved pastry princess, aka Thembekile Letlhape. Her case has also come to the fore as the amazing team at Spotlight spoke to her father, Dr. Khosi Letlhape, about his daughter's murder. So overall, it's been a month in which we are reminded just again how vulnerable the women of South Africa truly are.
Yeah. You know, I've been trying to think of, like, what is behind this? What makes a 17-year-old boy think it's okay to stab a 16-year-old girl and then hide her in a closet and then apparently join the search party? It's just, I just cannot get my head around it. What makes you think it's all right to take another's life? Well, we don't know the circumstances, but there's nothing that I can imagine that could lead anyone to take someone else's life. Mm. And yet it happened with the pastry princess as well, her boyfriend. I mean, what gives you the right to think that you own somebody? Who knows what went down? But often it's when the woman decides to leave.
Yes.
Or doesn't agree with whatever the guy's control dictates.
Or doesn't reciprocate the feelings.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's a one-sided.
Really, what makes you think, like, just because you can't? I mean, but the whole thing about this thinking that I have you and you are mine. But no one has anyone. Even if you have marriage vows, you do not have each other. You do not own each other. These are two individual human beings. There is something in the way we are in our society, and it's across the cultural spectrum, across the racial spectrum, how we are raising boys that is playing into this gender-based violence. And it's a whole thing. If I can't have it, then I'm going to just, nobody else can. Mm. And we've got to find a way of breaking through this.
You know, and it's just getting worse, because if I remember correctly, I read an article not too long ago where they said that South Africa's GBV and femicide levels are about six times the global average, which also speaks to there's something unique within South Africa that is wrong, that is not being addressed. And the question is, how do we address that? Where do you start?
So it starts at home.
Mm.
It starts how we raise our children, boys and girls, by the behavior that children emulate, that we as adults actually show. I think it does start there. And I don't think we take enough time in teaching kids and also showing them behavior where in relationships we are respectful of each other, that we don't have to be the same. We don't have to dress the same, speak the same, agree on everything. That we can be our unique individual selves and authentically and disagree and differ, and we can have our separate groups of friends and not feel threatened by that. That's freedom. I mean, there's a saying, if you really love somebody, set them free. And like, actually, that's pretty true, because if you do really love them, you'd want that person to live, first of all, not die at your hands. You want them to live and thrive and be wonderful in the world, because that's love. Love is about wanting the best for the people that you love. And I don't think there's enough, one, enculturation about that. How do we actually steep it in our culture that we don't own or possess, and that to love is to actually not own and control, but to let go and to flourish and to be there to support the flourishing of the person that you love.
Yes, exactly. I was thinking while I was preparing for the show today that looking back on the whole hashtag Am I Next movement that erupted in 2019, it's really infuriating to see just how little has changed actually since President Cyril Ramaphosa addressed protesters and activists before Parliament. I think it was in September 2019. We saw Cabinet sign a pledge against GBV in March this year, and then again Ramaphosa signed an act to establish a national council on GBV in June this year. But I mean, it all means very little to the many women and girls experiencing abuse and threats from their partner or their family right now. And that is my issue, is that this has been an issue that's been brewing for so long that we need more immediate solutions at this point, because we're losing this war against GBV.
Look, the council is a good thing if it brings all the heads together who have ways and means of dealing with it, like bringing GBV activists in the same room as policemen so that they can highlight what's happening on the ground to the police. I think one of our biggest problems is the police themselves.
Yes.
It's very uneven all around. There are some brilliant police stations, but it's uneven. We know that, there's a lot of corruption and bribery within the police as well. So, you know, the charges could be lost and disappear, et cetera, et cetera. But look, I'm hoping that with the new police minister, Melissa Ntuna, which I think he's got, I mean, I'm sure that man must have sleepless nights because he has inherited a hornet's nest. But I think he is a good minister. He was really good when he was Minister for Water. So hopefully having that council and having that diverse body of people who would be suggesting ways of actually dealing with gender-based violence with police would hopefully speed up the immediacy of what needs to be done. But it's a huge, big, hairy problem. And I think there's multiple levels of how it should be dealt with. One is it starts at home. Two, I think there's got to be a lot. I mean, look, my children get like, oh my gosh, every year we do GBV. We know, but maybe that's been done the wrong way. Maybe they should do it differently. Maybe they should actually take the kids to shelters where women have been abused and hear their stories from them themselves. I think kids learn much more from if they invite victims to speak at the schools. Get men to speak at the schools. But I mean, there are men's movements. We can talk about like how some of the toxic masculinity really is no good for a boy as well, you know. Do that. And then the level from government. We need more shelters. We need shelters where women can go to, because that's also the problem. In cases where women are dependent on the man, they will actually just tolerate the violence.
Yes, because they have nowhere else to go.
They have nowhere else to go. So there need to be shelters in proximity to police stations in every district, and they need to be safe. So there's a range of things, but there also needs to be support groups. There needs to be, I really think our country needs mass therapy. And start listening to each other and realizing that, like, at the end of the day, man, woman, black, white, we're not that very different, and that we are equal. And come on, like, just have a little bit of respect and understanding.
It's been called the Scorpions 2.0. A highly specialized independent crime-fighting wing within the National Prosecuting Authority. It took several years to make this much-needed corruption-busting unit a permanent fixture. So, could we finally see some movement on some of the country's biggest corruption cases?
Finally, after years of waiting, the Investigating Directorate Against Corruption, or IDAC, was made a permanent fixture in our crime-fighting machine. The unit is primarily responsible for investigating and prosecuting high-profile and complex corruption cases. And they've been doing amazing work, but on a minuscule budget with really no sense of stability because they haven't been made permanent up until now. So this is really such a welcome addition, I think, to our corruption fighting efforts that we finally have this specialized unit that's now independent and it has hopefully the funding and the backing from government that it needs.
Absolutely. I think that's brilliant news. But I mean, yes, why did it take so long? Like 5 whole years. I mean, these poor people had to do it seconded. I mean, how do you expect to get involved in like high level spiderweb kind of state capture corruption with 24 seconded investigators? I mean, okay, if you look at the, at the House of Assembly Parliament, I mean, that's just like the tip of the iceberg of many people involved in aspects of state of state. And then they are in every municipality and you know, every province, and they're all over the place. But I mean, it's, the MPA is still not at its peak, I don't think, at all.
Definitely.
It's still, I mean, all those people that did the bidding of Ubaba in Nkandla, there's still some people there. There's still some people in every one of the institutions that he spread his tentacles into. So, yeah, to turn all these government departments around from the rot that is set in is very difficult. So that's the great thing with the ID, hopefully, is that they attract the caliber of people that were in the Scorpions because they were brilliant. I mean, the kind of training that they had, global training in investigations, following the money, and also like to have winnable cases. It's like, why do you want to actually investigate every little thing when you could possibly just win on a tax evasion? You know, like they did with the mafia in the States. So we need clever prosecutors, clever investigators, people who are really, really committed to breaking the back of this cancer that has eaten through our society.
Since July 2022, a multi-country mpox outbreak across Africa has been largely overlooked by global health organizations. In many African countries, this was the first time the viral infection had been seen within their borders. In 2023, there was a dramatic increase in reported cases across the continent, and so far this year, reported cases have far exceeded last year's total, with more than 15,600 cases and 537 deaths. So, why has it taken this long for the rest of the world to take notice?
Now, let's turn our attention to Africa and the concerning mpox outbreak that caused a fair amount of alarm in recent weeks. On the 13th of August, the CDC Africa declared mpox a public health emergency of continental security, which sounds really bad. A week later, on the 20th of August, the World Health Organization followed suit, adding that it is now officially of international concern. And this after an outbreak in the DRC has spread to at least 13 other African countries as well as parts of Europe and Asia. So obviously the world is now thinking, oh, this is the next COVID lockdown is on its way, which I don't think that is the case. But many experts have accused bodies like the World Health Organization of once again ignoring the African continent, saying the international community still has this sort of flawed perception that mpox is, quote, a poor people problem, you know. And I think, again, this just reminds us how little we as a continent actually feature in the bigger global health conversation.
You know, I think the African voice during the COVID pandemic was heard, and a lot of our health professionals and our politicians were heard on the global front. Mpox is different to COVID, very different. And this is where I think the World Health Organization has failed, is actually sending the vaccinations into those African countries that are worst affected. Needs to happen and happen fast because we all are inhabitants of Earth. As we saw with COVID, We are a migratory species as human beings. We don't sit still. We move all over the planet. And like we saw with COVID, how it moved from China all over the world.
Hmm.
The mpox is slower than COVID because of its mode of transmission. So the cases in Eastern DRC, which is very volatile and a very unstable part of the country, but also it's been followed on trucking routes. So a lot of it has been sexually transmitted. So it needs to have close bodily contact, sexually transmitted. It's not like COVID, which is airborne. But diseases are diseases. There's one clade of mpox that was transmitted by people eating bushmeat, but this one is transmitted by physical contact. But the point is diseases are diseases, and diseases can start anywhere in the world and be spread anywhere in the world. And mpox is one of them that now the world has to actually take notice. They only take notice now that it's moved into Sweden. Yeah. So come on. It's like, give the vaccines to the Congo and give it to the most affected places in Africa so that it can be prevented all around the world. It's like, I don't understand that old racist Europe and the West is superior to everyone is still hanging there in the air. And one would think that we've learned from COVID that we are all on this planet and we are all equally affected. And diseases and viruses, they don't give a about what your nationality is.
Yes, because another issue that was raised by a number of infectious disease researchers, they wrote a great piece on The Conversation about this, saying that firstly, this whole idea that an infectious disease in one corner of the world should not be regarded as someone else's problem. They also emphasized the importance of making vaccines and diagnostic tests and treatments available to everyone in an equitable manner. Because what they specifically mentioned is this whole practice, especially in the US and in Europe, of stockpiling vaccines, because in case some kind of a pox strain is used in future as some kind of a bioweapon, which is just madness to me. And that seems to be impacting, again, what Africa gets in terms of these life-saving vaccines.
So you can't save lives now. We will keep it for ourselves. You know, it shows their paranoia and shows that, you know, paranoia comes from knowing that you have disrespect for other cultures and countries in the world, and you're scared that it's going to come back and bite you. But really, we need to move on. Your health is, we are all human. It affects every single one of us.
Inflation is at a 3-year low, and consumers are eager to feel the positive effects of this downward trend. But will we actually get to experience the benefits?
Now let's get on to some good news. I think it's needed after all of this. And on Tuesday, it was announced that the annual consumer price inflation dropped from 5.1% in June to 4.6% in July. And I mean, that's great news because it's the lowest it's been since July 2021. And that means that not only the rise in the cost of goods and services has slowed down, but it also paves the way, hopefully,
for a much needed interest rate cut in September that I think
a lot of South Africans are begging for.
I'm waiting for that.
Yes. So, I mean, it's a definite win for South African consumers across the board.
So, you know, I know there's a criticism of the Reserve Bank, but I think sometimes they did well by getting us to tighten our belts. And this is a good result from that.
Yes.
But hey, you know, the food prices, the escalating prices of bread, I mean, like basic stuff that people eat, it's greed. It really is greed.
Because I was wondering, now that inflation is at this 3-year low, I'm kind of wondering, we always say that, oh, this is great. But when you go to the shops, you never feel these price drops, even though you're supposed to. So I'm wondering if it will even translate in terms of what we buy at the shops at the end of the day.
So it's quite interesting. Stats SA, so food inflation has not gone down, but slowed, right?
Yes.
That's what I said. So it probably still is slightly increasing. But this is it. The staple diet of South Africans, which is bread and cereals, maize, okay, is showing upward momentum. It's the stats SA said it showed an annual increase of 5.6% in July, up from June's 5.2%. I don't know why. Look, is the grain prices, is it because of the continued war in Ukraine? which was the breadbasket of the world. Is that the cause of it? But it's really hitting in particular the poor.
Yes.
Because those are staple foods. But it's, look, for those of us who have bonds, it is great news.
South Africa's very last zoo elephant has finally been set free. This after decades of life in captivity. It took several years for animal activists to convince government and the Pretoria Zoo to allow this much adored elephant to be relocated to a place where he will no longer have to live a life in isolation. So, here's to Charlie the elephant. We hope he enjoys every second of his newfound freedom.
Let's go to a really happy story. And this one, I've been following it for years and it just brought such joy to my heart. And that is, of course, Charlie the elephant.
Have you seen Charlie in real life, in person, at the Pretoria Zoo?
Yes, I have.
I also have. And he just looks so sad there.
I know.
It's horrible.
It was just terrible. And I mean, to think, you know, captured in Zim in the 1980s. I mean, Charlie's been in captivity for well over 40 years, but finally, after years of organizations and animal welfare activists saying, listen, you cannot keep this poor animal in isolation any longer. This is not good for the animal. Finally, we've now seen Charlie being released at Shimbala Private Reserve in Limpopo. And according to the organization that took care of this whole big move, the EMS Foundation, they're saying he's showing positive signs of settling into his new holding facility. And this is the part that really made me almost want to shouted from the rooftop, is that he's showing such excitement when he's hearing other elephants out in the wild. And it's making him, like, you can just see there's renewed energy in this elephant, which just makes me so, so, so happy for him. Really, wow. I am so happy.
Now, that's the best news ever. I mean, you're, again, animals, particularly elephants, they live in herds. They need the company of other elephants. To be living alone in a zoo, yes, that is absolute cruelty.
Just for humans to gawk at, basically.
Yeah.
Really.
But I'm glad. I mean, I wonder how they will accept him. I hope they will accept him.
It would be interesting. Look, they say it's going to be a very lengthy process to kind of get him back. Because, for instance, he doesn't know how to forage on his own out in the wild because he's been fed by humans. So they have to teach him all of this from scratch. So it's going to be a very slow process of bringing him back into this. I think it's about 10,000 hectares eventually that he will be released into. But it's obviously not just going to be a case of here, open a gate and good luck. They're really trying to get him rewilded as best as possible.
But that's great news. That's absolutely amazing news.
But that's really all we have time for this week. It's been a very insightful, very deep show. I always love that we philosophize a lot in our conversations. That's why I always look forward to our chats. So yeah, as always, this has been such a great chat. Thank you.
It's a
taking
pleasure.
The time for joining us, and yeah, have an awesome week.
You too.
Thanks for listening. Catch us again next week for another Whole Week Wrap. Until then, why not join the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else? We always love hearing from you.